Here facing the bridge, the earthworks are the most formidable, roughly 4 feet high, 7 feet wide, with a 2-foot ditch along the outside. When Caswell's troops pull back, they bring their cannons, and Lillington has 3 of his own. Some are probably loaded with swan shot, a tin can that broke apart when fired and spread about 20 small bullets like buckshot. A small number of cannons are placed behind the earthwork directly in line with the bridge, like the daughter model you see. A few others are close to the road where the mother is now. The men had started another trench at a right angle to the road between you and the bridge, to the left as you face the bridge, but for unknown reasons stopped. The Patriots take up positions on both sides of the road behind the completed earthworks. Just before dawn, still in darkness, vague shapes appear at the far side of the bridge. They draw up short when they see the planks are gone. A Whig sentry is standing just on this side. He asks who they are. "A friend of the king," a loyalist answers. He probably thinks the people on this side are fellow Tories, maybe from the other wing. The sentry squats down to make a smaller target and decides what to do. The voice on the other side now asks whom he is talking to in Gaelic. The sentry has no answer. What comes next is a bullet, followed by several more. To say the least, this wakens the entire camp behind you. The person on the other side was MacLean, ahead of his wing and the Loyalists. MacLeod hears the shots and runs forward from his wing. The two of them make a rash decision. A company of 80 Highlanders form into 2 single-file columns to cross the stringers. No eyewitness accounts state whether they are wearing kilts, but they do bear traditional Scottish broadswords called claymores. MacLeod leads one column, and Captain John Campbell the other. The rest of MacLean's wing follows them. It may seem strange that Scots, traditional enemies of England, would be fighting for the English king. The oldest among them, or the fathers of some men, had sworn an oath to support the throne as grounds for release after their capture at the 1746 Battle of Culloden in Scotland. Others had done so to gain permission to come to America. Some had served in the British Army. No doubt the king's promise of 200 acres of land taken from rebels and 20 years of no property taxes helped entice others. Many leaders are still estate holders in Scotland and or reserve army officers. As quickly as they dare, given the grease, the officers step onto the stringers and cross to your side. "King George and broadswords," yell many of the men, the battle cry they had agreed upon, for what now is considered the last claymore charge in world history. Some jab the tips of their swords into the stringers to keep from slipping off. Campbell and MacLeod lead the charge up the road, not sure how many men they face, if any. Spotting the empty trench, perhaps they assume there aren't many. You watch the Highlanders rush by you. As they get around the curve, they are only about 30 yards from the Patriots, well within the effective range of Whig muskets. Behind the earthwork, Caswell yells the order to open fire. "You better get out of here." Use the walking instructions under Claymore's Fall to Firearms and start its audio clip.